Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast, where we are here to talk about Sunderland's 1-1 draw with Luton Town. Quite a few bits coming up on the show tonight. Myself and Gareth are joined by Phil Smith from the Sunderland Echo.
Evening all.
And Rory Fallow.
Hello.
Hello. And we're also going to hear from Lee Cannavale today, which is good.
So he just shouted over the top of us there. It's a bit rude, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't hear what you said.
I suppose he was shouting over the top of us. It's a while since Rory's been on, hasn't it?
I feel like that gets said every time I'm on now.
Twice a year.
like I'm getting injured all the time. Can't get fitness. Johnny Williams of the podcast.
Gets better for not being here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good. I'll definitely take that.
That's the George Honeyman thing at the minute, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
We're going to hear from Lee Cattermole tonight. I'll tell you what we're going to do first, though. We'll hear from Craig Clark, who was chaperoning for us on our behalf. Well, for us on the club at the weekend. He had a journalist over from Germany. Did you get his name? Tim Olsen,
I think it is.
Yeah, and he's going to do a feature on Sunderland. They were interested, weren't they?
Well, he came and spoke to us in the Peagot, and he said he's trying to understand why people are like, so many people coming to watch Sunderland at the moment. He said he doesn't really understand it, and logically it doesn't happen in Germany, so they were trying to kind of investigate.
So he was just coming to see what the pre-match culture was like in Sunderland. Popped along to see us for a bit, didn't he? Thanks for coming, everybody who came. Darren Williams always brings in quite a few. That was quite enjoyable. I always feel like he's got different stories as well. He never has to recycle stories, does he?
No.
Which is always a good sign. So Craig also met up with some fans of St Mirren, where Jack Ross was. They came down for the game. So he chatted with one of them first, and then you'll hear him chat to Tim.
Hello, it's Craig Clark here from the Wise Men Say podcast. I'm with a St Mirren fan who's down for the game from Paisley. If you want to introduce yourself.
Yeah, how you doing, guys? I'm Mark.
And why are you here today, Mark?
We're here basically for a day out, a day out in the lash. But obviously we've got a massive affiliation to Jack because of what he did for us at the club. So we decided, the guy who runs our supporters bus is a massive Sunderland fan. So we just thought, you know what, let's get down there, man. We've got a free weekend this week, so winter break in Scotland. Let's go down, speak to Sammy, speak to James, speak to Jack, speak to Big Potsy, and see how we got on for the day, man.
Sounds good. Obviously, you'll be wanting Sunderland to win today, then.
Aye.
I hope you do.
Yes, we do, yeah. Most of us do, bear in mind we're playing black and white.
I know.
So, that might not be the most best thing to say, but I think most of us want Sunderland to win today, aye.
Well, I hope you enjoy your day, mate. Thanks so much, man. And the scenes there with Jack Ross were fantastic.
Absolutely brilliant, man. Absolutely. He'll always be one of our own, Jack, do you know what I mean? He's one of those guys, he built up this thing at the club when he was with us. Obviously, he was there as a player as well, but when he came as manager, he built up this just huge rapport with the supporters. It just became like us and him all in together, so it was absolutely fantastic. So give a little back, you know.
Yeah, well, thanks for talking to us.
No worries.
Enjoy your day.
Enjoy your game, man.
Thanks. I'm in the tunnel with a journalist from Bild who's been here to cover the game. If you'd like to introduce yourself.
Yeah, hi guys, this is Tim from Germany, from Hamburg, for German sports magazine Sport Bild, and I've been here with Greg at the game against Luton. Unfortunately, it only went 1-1.
What did you think of the game, or the atmosphere, the style of football? Was it what you expected?
No, it wasn't. I think the football technically was way much better than we have in Germany in the third division, and that's why I've been here, because I knew that Sunderland has such a big attendance every game, and we can't imagine this in German football in the third division. And today it was good atmosphere, but unfortunately Sunderland hasn't won.
So what will you take away from this experience, do you think? Some good memories. Obviously, you're going to write an article that will be out next week. What kind of things are you thinking of putting in the article?
Of course, I want to go back to another Sunderland game, I think.
Maybe an away game?
Yeah, I would definitely enjoy that because I heard that 8,000 people went to Blackpool, right? And I think the atmosphere to drive to an away game, it's very special. It's not like every single home game. No, here every home game is just unusual, I know, but I would like to see how the Sunderland fans are doing in an away game, but... I would like to come back with you're going to promote to the championship at the end of the season as well.
Well, we'll play Southend at the end of the season, so if you can manage to wrangle a ticket and a trip over for that, that should be hopefully a party atmosphere.
Yeah, you might help me.
Well, see what I can do. Yeah, why not? I'll definitely try.
And then you will come back to Germany and visit a very good football game, not something like this here today.
I was going to say, why don't we talk about your team for a bit then? And you know how because they're a third division team, right?
And my team is a second division team in Germany.
Second, not third. Do you want to talk a bit about them? Sort of who you support? What's it like there?
In this season, I don't really want to talk about them because it's a very bad season until this point. After the first half of the season, it's I know we are the. It's not a, on place 16, and it's a very nice club from the west of Germany called Duisburg, MSV Duisburg.
We'll all be looking out for them from now on.
Yeah, you have to, and I will look out for Sunderland.
That's the right answer.
Yeah, I enjoyed it really well. Thank you very much.
No, Kate. And thanks for coming along, and it's been a great pleasure spending the day with you. So, yeah, obviously we've got a new convert now as a Sunderland fan in Tim. So yeah, but when that goes out, I think it's going to be just in the newspaper, is that right, or will it be online?
No, we will publish in our magazine next week on Wednesday, and yeah, whole Germany will read this, I hope. We are one of the biggest news sports magazines in Germany, and maybe we'll publish it online as well, but yeah.
Okay, well, we'll see.
I will show you.
Yeah, we'll take a look at it and I'm sure it'll be full of positive stuff about Sunderland. Right, thanks Tim. Safe journey home as well.
Thank you, Craig.
Right, so it's our turn to reflect on the game now. 1-1, balance of the game, points seemed fair to people, do they think, or do other people think Sunderland edged it or Luton edged it?
I'd say draw was fair, and I think Sunderland first half, maybe apart from the first 10 minutes, we were by far the better side. It was just very similar to the Charlton game, that we were on top for say the majority of that first 45 minutes, but didn't create enough, didn't capitalise being on top, and that does make it feel like putting the referee in performance to side, which I'm sure we'll definitely get on to, but it does feel like 2 points dropped, and that's now, from Boxing Day to now, it's 5 games running where we've only scored once. That's including 3 draws. Not being, this isn't like a massive criticism, I'm not too worried, but we're not being clinical enough at the minute. We're not putting these teams away. And that's fair enough against teams like Luton and Charlton, who you can see they're noticeably better sides than the majority of sides in this division.
Best team, I think, it's been the stadium.
Yeah, best game of football at the stadium.
I thought Barnsley were better than them.
Did you?
Yeah.
But even Barnsley went 3-0 down to us. But again, we were clinical in that game. But you can see the difference in quality between Luton and Charlton, and you'd probably like you put Portsmouth in that bracket as well. Barnsley, like you say, Gareth. But if you're not being clinical in those games, you've got to be more clinical against Shrewsbury, Wickham, a little bit of a worrying trend at the minute, which obviously Jack Ross, I'm sure, is more than aware of. And I'm confident he'll address it, which is why I'm not getting too worried at the moment, be that with signings or if we change style of play slightly. But I don't think, even if you don't think it was a penalty or what your view is on Maguire's red card, which I know didn't have too much of an impact in the overall game, given how late it was, but I don't think you can still complain about a draw. Was a fair result. Yeah. Luton did,
but it's not a disaster. Again, like we said, at Charlton, a point against a side that's up there with you. At least you're not handing them the 3 points. Portsmouth lost as well, so if you're gonna look at it as a glass half full kind of person, you know, you're not letting them get away from you.
We've gained on them.
Yeah,
we've not lost the team above us, and we've gained on them.
We haven't let Luton gain. No. We've stayed level, and we've gained a point on.
That's the interesting thing. There was a lot of people upset. I think the Shrewsbury game is the one that's done it, because if we'd beaten Shrewsbury, we'd be second.
Didn't Portsmouth also drop points that day as well?
I believe
so. We drew with Shrewsbury.
I just think people need to settle down a little bit. When you look at how we're, you know, points wise, we're tracking 2 points a game, which is usually good enough to get teams promoted. I think people just need to relax a little bit. I think those wounds are deep of the past 5 years, and it doesn't take much for people to start panicking. We've had a lot of games. We're talking about this in the group chat before, and Chris Weatherspoon pointed out we've played 35 games this season so far, which is incredible, really. You know, in the Premier League season, we'd probably usually play about 42, 43, yeah, maybe, if you include the cup competition. So it's a bit, it does feel a bit, I feel a bit weary. I'm looking forward to the break that's come about because the Gillingham game's off, because it feels like it's just been non-stop, relentless. And
need it, don't you? We need to get your admin done.
It does, yeah, yeah. But it's true. I mean, there's so many games, and I think, you know, the pressure is, it's a different kind of pressure, and I just think, you know, people are reacting maybe a little bit panicked because we're so desperate to get promoted at the first attempt, and there's that worry that I don't think it's unlikely. I think we will go up automatically, but I think the idea of not is too difficult for some people to process. And I think as a result, it's creating this panic and worry that comes out in, you know, after the game at the weekend, people are, well, you know, we should be doing this, we should be doing that, we've missed this opportunity, we missed that opportunity. We've played in the last six games, and correct me if I'm wrong, we'll say seven just to be sure, but we've played Blackpool, Portsmouth, Charlton and Luton, who are all teams who are decent, and we've only lost one of those games. So when you look at it that way, and you look at the seven fixtures that we've got coming up, have you done, if you've written them down, Stephen?
Well, we were going to have a wide.
Phil hasn't said anything yet. We should let Phil.
We were going to do a wide discussion with all this because this relates to a lot of the tweets. But we'll just ignore the schedule and we'll try and get back on another game because I do want to see what people think. We will look at the next fixtures and stuff like that. Just going back, because we're going to hear from Lee Catamon a bit, so just to wrap up the analysis of the game, we were discussing on the way here, Phil, that Luton, their fans and players yet again, another team that celebrated a point against Sunderland like they'd won the Champions League. I've read a couple of blogs and stuff from Luton fans and Luton websites as well where they're saying their players were at it, like 100% better than they've been recently, even though they've been doing well recently. This just reflects another problem we have. We can't deny the fact that teams are raising the game against us, and it's going to make a difference.
Yeah, I mean, I always go back, the example I always use is after the Wigan Wanderers game when Gareth Ainsworth got a standing ovation from the director's box and we went down the tunnel. Every single Wigan director, there was probably about 10, 12 of them, and obviously all come up for the game, big day, and you got a standing ovation for a 1-1 draw. And Wigan did well, and it was a good point for them, but it does put into perspective just that kind of thing. I think Luton, I think you've got to, one of the big things that, in my opinion, Sunderland are struggling with this season is teams like Luton they've had a bit of growth over a period of time. And I think in games like that, it really tells. Mm-hmm. They have such unbelievable conviction in what they do. They've built that team. The patterns are in place. There's relationships all over the pitch. It's instinctive. And I think Sunderland can go a little bit flat. And I think they are sometimes lacking a little bit of almost conviction in the play. But that's what happens when you build a new team. And when you play so many games, you don't get time on the training pitch. And I think that was another example where I was watching that position that I felt had a little bit more conviction and a little bit more rhythm about them. And I just think that's, to an extent, a little bit of an inevitability, to be honest.
I feel at the moment, I mean, I mentioned this to Rory, you disagreed with me, but I feel as though we are actually playing better as a unit than we were when we had that run where we won the six league games. I really do. I know some of you might think, oh, he's talking a load of rubbish. I felt as though at the time we were battling our way through games, the Shrewsbury away game, the Doncaster away game, where we really did just scrap for those points and managed to keep clean sheets and win the game. Whereas at the moment, I feel as though there was a swagger against Charlton in our first half, against Blackpool in the first half, against Luton. We're the better side against Portsmouth in the first half. I know people might say, well, you know, the game's over 90 minutes, blah, blah, blah. You're right. But I just feel as though what you're saying, Phil, about Luton being a more cohesive unit, I feel as though naturally that's a bit of progress, where I feel as though we definitely are a more cohesive unit than we were during that period.
You mentioned Portsmouth. I don't think we had a shot on target in that entire first half. I think there's a lack of conviction there at the minute, which is a worry. If you take it back a little bit further back than the Doncaster and Shrewsbury games, You look at Rochdale, you look at Scunthorpe early in the season, where we're really, really capitalising on our chances. And that comes, obviously, we didn't have Josh Madger in the team. And you do kind of, didn't have Josh Madger on the team on Saturday. You do kind of think, was that part of us early in the season down to still being a bit of an unknown quantity? Because if you look at the way Lyndon Gooch was playing early in the season compared to now, he looks a different player. If Lyndon Gooch had just came into the team now, you'd be quite worried about him, I think, because he's not... And he did do well on Saturday for the goal, actually. I think his first half on Saturday was the best he'd looked in a while, but against Charlton he was poor. He was poor against Blackpool. He's not been on a good run of form since about December. Is that because he's maybe a bit one-dimensional? He's being found out now. Do we need to bring in something else into the team? Do we need all our style of play to get the best out of him or someone else just to give us that bit of edge again? Because I think attacking-wise, the only one who isn't really predictable as such is Josh Madger, because he's so good. You look at his goal against Barnsley, you can't teach that level of quality.
Him
and defenders
McGeady,
at this
him
level.
And McGeady could,
yeah,
could
they're
do
the two, actually. Look at him, look at his shot where he hit the bar, the way he cut inside. He was never giving that ball away, and he only had one thing on his mind. Really unlucky not to score. But the flip side to that is, you look at when the header falls to Charlie Wyke. You know, that...
I was behind the goal. I think it's a little bit more difficult for people
to
think.
It's funny because I was...
Target, at least.
No, I was in line with the penalty box.
It flew at him, really, and he had a second.
And it was he had to like force, like he probably would have wanted to drop a bit more. It was quite a loopy ball when it came down. He almost had to get to the ball rather than wait for the ball to get to him. And as a result, he's headed it. It looked bad, but it was a more difficult chance. It was a bit like that Honeyman one against Coventry, where people thought like he should have scored. You know, when Maguire hit the post with a free kick and it bounced back to him, he skied it.
Other one Charlie Wyke had against Charlton, actually. Well, that was a much more difficult one. But these are racking up for Wyke at the minute as well, which you worry about his confidence, don't you?
It's a fine line between saying, right, he's still rusty and maybe is he at the quality we're at. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with Madger, Phil, so I know they are after a number nine, which again we'll talk about. But your opinion on Wyke? I don't think the service to him helped.
But at
the same time, when you're used to watching somebody like Madger up front, and then McGeady just behind him, he does look a little bit off that.
To me, he looks very, very static in the box. Yeah. At the moment, he feels very easy to defend against when you have two big centre-halves who aren't intimidated by a player like that, like Luton had. He does look pretty poor. The amount of times a cross goes in, he seems to be caught on his heels. He's not getting across his marker. But I have to say that the two away games, Blackpool and Charlton, I know Charlton, he missed his chances, but his contribution outside the box was outstanding. He was Madger's body language in those two games compared to where it had been before that was just such a huge difference, and that's because he knew that Charlie could get him into the game in the areas where he was hurt.
He needs a partner, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. It's really evident. But it's you know, I think inside the box, there is a definite concern there, because at the moment he looks quite easy to defend against. But I would stress that if you're looking at that Blackpool and Charlton game as four really good points over two tough away games, he was a huge part of that. So the question is whether at the moment that inside the box, whether that's a lack of confidence and a lack of sharpness, or is it more about, you know, game intelligence? I think it's too early to tell the answer to that.
We've seen this so many times with centre forwards, and it can go one way or the other, can't it? Where you see them and you think they start off really well, like Altidore, like Sinclair.
Well, Sinclair to an extent is a really good example, because I don't think Sinclair was far off being really useful in a lot of ways. And you look back at the Doncaster game, he did really well at what he was asked to do, but the longer it goes on and the more you just drop deeper and deeper, you stop taking shots on, and suddenly it's like, so it will be interesting. He does definitely need to just get one in and take it from there.
Remember as well, and this isn't making excuses for him, like you say, Phil, he did have a good game at Charlton, he did have a good game at Blackpool, but he's played, we've had loads of games recently, he's played 90 minutes in a lot of them, and he played in the week 90 minutes thereabouts against Newcastle. So it's a lot of, when you're just coming back, when you've been out for 3 months, he's played constantly. Now there's going to be probably a point where you hit the wall. I think he didn't look as sharp as he had done on Saturday as he did previous
times. It looked like,
yeah, and he might just be leggy. I understand people get frustrated, and you know, after the game there was a lot of people calling him every name under the sun, but I think you just got to be a little bit more just every, again, reiterate the point, and people got opinions and that's fine, but sometimes you just got to try and relax, you know, and don't bring that that anxiety that's around it. Like, it doesn't take much. I do feel as though will not take much to turn this season into a bad spell. Like, it really does. I just feel as though on the edge all the time.
Gareth Sayers Relax is the name of this podcast. I've decided already.
It's not. You know what the name of the podcast is, and we haven't talked about him yet either.
Right.
Because I was him from Netflix at the weekend. I was having the whip round. I think there was a few hats going round the bottom, actually, for the referee.
We've done well to get this far into it without mentioning the referee. I mean, Rory pushed over it, but this is Leigh Probert, so he's a Premier League referee. I think he's household name, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody knows who he is. I mean,
yeah, he made sure everyone knew who he was.
What I think of with Leigh Probert is the bit. Did you ever see the footage when Arsene Wenger got sent to the stand in Old Trafford, mm-hmm. and Gordon Strachan does a voiceover of the chain of events? Has anybody seen
that? No.
Gordon Strachan, Leigh Probert's the fourth official on that game, so he grasses Wenger to the ref, and Gordon Strachan does a voiceover. It's really funny. I just think of Leigh Probert when I think of him. I just think of that. Now, I mean, he waltzed around. He tried to make it all about him, didn't he? And this is not even one way you could say one side benefited from really well.
I thought first half, I don't think we had a free kick for 25 minutes.
He was bad for both teams. Oh, yeah. What you would say is, arguably, you know, Luton get a penalty. I have seen some people say they think it was a penalty. I didn't, personally.
No way.
To go around.
Absolutely. What was it for, handball?
He gave it from Flanagan pulling Collins back as he was about to shoot, apparently.
He didn't even get near him. He put his body across.
And surely if that's the case, Flanagan should have been booked and he would have been sent off. That's a booking if he's given a foul.
It wasn't
for that.
A penalty, and that really did seem to knock the stuffing out of us as well, didn't it?
Well, I couldn't believe when he got back. None of the Luton players were appealing for a penalty.
No, the game was going on.
They just stopped and he was just, oh, penalty. He maybe got bored. I was thinking, like, he's going to do something stupid here. And then he sent, like, one of them off and I was like, all right. And like didn't seem anything in it really, considering some of the other challenges in the game. And
I missed that one totally, I'll be honest. I just saw him with a red card in his hand.
Well,
before he sent him off.
There was one towards the end where Luton broke, and I think it was Elliot Lee took it to the corner, and McGeoch just cleaned him out, and it was just, you know, the most yellow card foul you've ever seen. It was just complete, you know, one of those where you just take it and he just didn't even show yellow cards, and it was just like it's just absolutely baffling. It was just unbelievable, and it ruined a really good game. Because the first half I enjoyed, and I thought the second half was awful. And just because he had no control, he was letting everybody slow it down. It was a real shame, to be honest, because it should have been a really good game of football, and it was for a bit. But the second half, I didn't enjoy it all. And it was,
I missed Hilton's red card from where I was, but I saw the ref get his red card out early, so I knew he was going off because I could see it in his hand. But then later on in the second half, one of our players goes up. Eric was one of our players. Probert actually makes an elbow gesture and points at him, and that's what he's got off of here, because he points at him, does an elbow gesture, and then showed him a yellow card. Now, I'm not saying, I wasn't calling for him to be sent off, but that's weird.
It's inconsistency.
That's weird in itself. Like, how can you justify a yellow card if you think he's elbowed him, which is what he was gesturing?
The referees say, I heard, I think it was Graham Paul interviewed about once, he says referees, your first decision basically sets what your tolerance is going to be for that game. So if you think it's going to be a game where it's quite niggly, there's going to be a lot of fouls, you'll try and let some of them go early on. So you're saying, I've got a low tolerance here. If you want to put a hard line on it, you'll start giving all them early on. So when he's showed what his tolerance is by sending off Hilton, so when that happens again, Surely that's a red card as well. But the one for Flanagan as well, when Flanagan got booked for pretty much what the Luton defenders have been doing to Charlie Wyke all afternoon. Like in the first half, I did actually, sorry to go back to Charlie Wyke, but felt a bit sorry for him because he was getting dragged about.
There was one where he got flattened and he braved play on, and then Lyndon Gooch got fouled and he let him go again, and Luton nearly scored. But then every time a Luton player hit the deck, he was just like free kick. And when you said about centre tolerance, it was like, well, you're not doing the same for one team.
I'd also argue, now I don't think it was a foul by Flanagan for the penalty, but let's say it was. I would argue, because he's got his shot away, that's the advantage played anyway. is what I would say. That's how I would view it. If somebody's going to, somebody's pulling onto you and you break clear of them and you get your shot away, that's an advantage. That's your advantage.
Yeah.
And he hits the inside of the post. So even if it was a foul, I think I was iffy anyway.
Well, Maguire was fouled in the build up.
I was going to say that people think he was fouled. I did at the time.
I think he was fouled twice.
I didn't really see that one, to be honest. Shouldn't have stayed down, though.
It seemed like a foul. He also could have played the ball like way before he got fouled as well. He shouldn't have stayed down.
He let us run
it.
That was pretty poor.
Right, but, so which takes us on to Maguire's red card, in which they have appealed, they've confirmed.
Yeah.
Again, it's not great because you don't have loads of replays like when we're in the Premier League and even the Championship. Lots of different angles. I didn't think it was a red at the time. I've seen one replay, but I still don't think it was a red. I think he sort of got shoved into the player.
To be honest, I didn't really see the incident, and this is the issue that you mentioned there aren't that many angles, and I think that's the problem when you try and get these things rescinded, because you have to emphatically prove that the referee made an incorrect decision, and that's quite hard to do if you've only got one angle from the gantry. So I'll be interested to see what angles they've got of it.
It just seemed like a guess to me. They looked at the reaction of their players, who at the time I think were annoyed because they were down to 10 men, they were losing 1-0, and I think were the 1-0 down, or was it 1-1?
No, it was 1-1.
Their captain in the middle of the park was fuming all the time anyway. And I think he reacted so angry to me, they just looked like they guessed it.
I think it has to be the linesman who'd given it, because the ball had gone, the referee had turned. So I think it was the linesman's decision. He did have a decent view of it, but hopefully, Jack Ross said he'd seen a replay that made clear that there wasn't a stamp, which hopefully they'll be able to show that, because like I say, as much as to us it can seem obvious, but you have to really be able to prove it to get them to overturn it, to admit their own referees made a mistake.
If they've got any sense, it'll just, there'll have been a referee's assessor there. And
it's probably Steve Howard on
Luton fans and Sunderland fans were saying how dreadful he was all game. Maybe it's had any sense to just hit reset on it. I mean, neither were really.
But Luton aren't appealing theirs because they haven't got an angle, so they don't think it was a red card. But they haven't got a good angle to prove it's the wrong decision. So that's what I'm trying to point out, is that even if it being the wrong decision doesn't make it easy to overturn, is what I'm saying. Because Luton have decided that even though they're convinced it wasn't a red card, there's no point because they haven't got an angle that emphatically proves it.
I guess it's a benefit to having full well 73. Yeah. They've probably got loads
of cameras. HD cameras.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if they are using that as evidence. If they've got that footage, they should use it as evidence. But on that point on Hilton, he's already been sent off for a straight red this season. Dangerous play, he two-footed somebody. So he's already been sent off, he's already missed three games. So he's been sent off again, so I assume he'll miss.
Apparently he's going to miss their game against Portsmouth.
Yeah, he'll miss four then, won't he? So if he's already been sent off this season.
They're missing a game against Portsmouth as well. If you're just setting your sights on second for the minute as well.
At the moment, you'd have to.
Totally.
Yeah, so that's a big miss for them. And they've lost the manager this week. And you think psychologically, I always think what goes on at other clubs, if it was us, put ourselves in their shoes, and how would you feel? They've lost the manager this week. Yeah, they drew the game, which is great. But at the same time, they've lost the striker for four games, missing the gates Portsmouth. It's a blow, so psychologically they're going to have to deal with that, and they'll have a new manager coming in. There's a lot for Sunderland to take advantage of at the moment.
And as well, there's still two weeks left of the transfer window. Yeah. We've still got time to get that striker in, and you would presume you probably know more than us, Phil, what his ideas are and where Jack Ross wants to strengthen. Would it just still be a striker? And I know people mention midfielders, but you've got to look at George Honeyman coming back.
Tell you what, before we have a chat about that, because some people have asked these questions on Twitter, we'll hear from Lee Cattermole now. This is Wise Men Say's interview with Lee Cattermole after the game.
Is it kind of normal to go out and you see there's such a big attendance right now because you've been here for so long? Or is it every day, every time something unusual to get out and see so many fans, even in the third division right now?
Well, I think, I wouldn't say it's unusual. I think the fans have always been great. The 10 years I've been here, we've had big numbers, but we spent probably 8 years of them in the Premier League, which obviously you get great teams coming to the stadium. Obviously the buzz is high. But last year was a tough year for the football club. We had a big disappointment dropping out of the Premier League, and then things didn't go to plan in the Championship in terms of the way the club was being run, how active we were as a club with the fans. And you know, I think the club was a little bit confused last year, I think. We had a new takeover this season, new ownership, new manager, new staff, and I think that created a bit of optimism again and a bit of belief. And you see that, and then winning games is huge. So suddenly we had maybe 30,000 the first game of the season. We win in the last minute, and that just keeps rolling. You keep winning games. Sure. Obviously, we've been unlucky. We haven't won the game today, but you know, I think fans are enjoying seeing the team win, which is important to everybody.
Yeah, isn't it a bit dangerous too if you have so many fans? Because if it's going like last season, there are much more people shouting at you when it's gone bad, and it's very mental pressure, I think, for you as a player.
It brings pressure, yeah, it does. Yeah. But hopefully, you've got the right people in the dressing room who can deal with that, and you know, and enjoy that, because you can see once we're doing well in the game, the noise pushes you on. And but it does bring pressure, you know. It's not normal probably at this level. We go to other stadiums where we went to Blackpool, for example, there's 2,500. We took 8,000 as a away team, so that's quite unusual. Yeah. But we still felt pressure there because we've got 8,000 fans coming on New Year's Day to watch us and hopefully watch us win. So it does bring pressure, but the lads are dealing with it well, and everyone's having a good season so far. Hopefully that'll continue. But that, to me, stresses the importance of winning football matches when you've got big crowds, because you want to see them happy, and we need them on side, which that's what they want. But obviously when the team's not playing well, they get that frustration because they want to see the effort and the commitment, which in fairness this season with the dressing room we've got, and majority of players really willing to go and play for the football club and want to be here.
I was going to say, has there been a bit of a switch in mentality in that dressing room? Because you can feel it in the stands.
Yeah.
It feels like everyone wants to be here. They're all pulling in the same direction. The manager seems great.
Yeah,
as well, you know, he's a
great guy. The gaff has been different class. Because when he came in, I know it looks now, it might look like the job was a bit easier than it has been, but it's been a really difficult job for the gaffer. You know, he came in, we didn't have much of a squad. I think we were going in pre-season 12, 13 players. We didn't have a squad. We had a lot of young players, and he's managed to pick good players and lads who know the league. And I think if you look right through the middle of the team, we're pretty strong. So the gaffer needs huge credit for that, but I think everyone just wants to keep the feet on the ground. I think that's the important bit. It's a tough league. It's been shown that with the Charlton, the Portsmouth, the Luton games, everyone's competing with us. I can't remember many easy games we've had. We've got to keep our feet on the ground, keep working hard, and hopefully by the end of the season get to where we want to get to.
How frustrating was it to be suspended today?
It was
just
something
a big game, you know.
Yeah, it was something I was aware of, but again, I think, you know, there's no excuses, but I don't make many tackles. If you look at the amount of fouls I make to how many yellow cards I've had,
we all see it.
And it's something that gets calls from a young age when I've made tackles and get a reputation, and suddenly that you go away to stadiums where there's 7,000-8,000 fans, and suddenly I make a tackle and it's a big thing. So I'm aware of that, but again, there's been a couple. But I come back from an injury where I didn't do much, and then I come back and I've played 5 or 6 games. So missing one game wouldn't have been the end of the world, but missing two, it was tough to watch that today for me. But we played well in the game, and it's another point towards the total we're going to need.
Exactly, agreed. Yeah.
You were here since 10 years now, I think.
Yeah, I think it's been 10 seasons.
Does it feel different right now, this season? Is it really such a refresh, everybody telling me?
Yeah, refreshing is probably a good word, yeah. I think those times where you feel you might need a freshen up yourself, a new environment, because obviously with 10 years at any club or any working industry, I think you can become a little bit stale. But it has definitely felt like a fresh club this year, and something which I felt I needed that, whether it was to move on or stay here. But you know, the club means a lot to me. I've been here a long time, and the amount of ups and downs you had along the way, but we've always finished the season with real highs, and then maybe not recruited well enough in the summers. I felt to play for Sunderland you need to be a certain type of character, and I've seen them characters going into different clubs, not as big clubs, and something like the Burnley's, people like that. I think what they've got in their dressing room, I think, looks like a club sort of team that can play for Sunderland. And so, I think,
as Tim says, it's 10 seasons. So any talk about a testimonial?
No, I've not. I've, do you know what, I've not even thought of that. I'm getting married this summer, so that's I just want to focus.
There you go.
On,
marriage at the stadium, testimonial. Great.
And
congratulations, by the way.
No, yeah. I just want to focus on the job in hand. I think it's so easy, and especially in the modern life now, I think everyone gets carried away with things. And I think just, you know, my experience in football is once you think you've cracked it, it soon bites you know, and you need to keep your feet on the ground and keep working hard. And we've seen today they were a good team, and it's going to take a lot more effort and carrying on what we're doing to get over the line this year. But you know, I think everyone's confident we can do that, and we've got that belief in the squad to hopefully get some success.
You've played many years in the Premier League, now you're playing in the League One with Sunderland. Is it more important for you to have such a big club behind you with so many fans than playing in the highest league you can?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's important. I think you still, when you go out and play today, there's 37,000. A lot of Premier League clubs don't get that amount. Yeah. So you still have the same pressure. That buzz, it still gets you, you know. And I think that's nice to have, them little nerves. I always get nervous before the games, which is good. It's a sign that you care and you want to play. And, we're sometimes getting bigger attendances now than we did in the Premier League. So, it's whatever level you play at. I'm finding a way to really enjoy it. And I respect the league. There's a lot of good players in this division, but I think I've got something. What I've gained over the years I've played in the Premier League in terms of dealing with the pressure, playing at a high level, mentally I feel like I'm strong. So I think that's where I can still have an edge on players here.
You mentioned the Netflix documentary. Did you watch it together with the team? What did you think when you saw the documentary?
We're aware of it last year, and then we obviously watched the first episode together as a squad, and I think the lads' thoughts were pretty positive towards it. Should we be okay? So we were happy. I haven't seen the rest of the series yet. Watched one episode, which at the minute I'm concentrating on what I'm doing at the minute. That can come later. I'm sure it's not going anywhere on Netflix, and
yeah.
It'd be nice to maybe watch them back to back, because it was a tough season for us last year, and it's not something I can really gain much positiveness from, positivity or whatever you say. So I'm just keeping my head down and keep concentrating on this.
We can tell watching you week in, week out. Been, you know, great this season. Really appreciate that, you know, you've stayed and put the effort in. Like, as fans, it's all we want.
I'd have been really gutted if I had to leave in the summer on the back of what we're doing, and probably the feeling, and especially messages from the club about me as well, which I didn't really like. I didn't really agree with, in terms of people have seen what I've given to the club and the injuries I've played with. Like, I played 3 or 4 years with my hip, which was bad. And seeing Andy Murray this week reminded me of some dark times I had, and
The story you don't get, you know what I mean? As supporters, and I'm not saying you would want to go out and be shouting about that, but people need to understand footballers are human beings and they go through stuff, you know?
Yeah, well, I think once you cross the white line, everyone thinks everyone's 100%, and I'm telling the manager I'm 100%, that's why I'm playing, but a lot of times you never get like that. But I've given a lot to the club, and I'd like to think I'd hopefully go out in a different way, to which it might have been in the summer, you know? So it was important to me that I try and things right before a shoot.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Jack Ross, and you're listening to the Wise Men Say podcast.
Lovely catamaran leg. Deal.
Always have. Always have.
It's good that, though, when he's saying he didn't want to go out. He would have been gutted if he left after last season. And it is good that we're seeing him play again this year, because he's right. And I feel for John O'Shea a little bit on that front as well.
Wouldn't have been worse than Glenn Leuven's, really, would he?
Even if he didn't play, it just would have been nice if he was around for the uplift.
Well, he's had another bad time this year, on it, Redden, so... You know, I'm sure he would have been an asset, Lewis, in this league. Doing the job that Leuven's is doing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That actually sounded more of a dig against Leuven's than it was. He hasn't actually played enough. No. But
he's been in League One O'Shea, hasn't he, for us this season, Leuven's, hasn't he?
Catamore's got to right some wrongs this season, and it would have been nice for O'Shea to do that as well. But as we were talking about before, with transfers there, before the league had them all rudely interrupted us. So would it be looking at midfielders as well, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the interesting one kind of coming down the track is the Madger thing, isn't it? Because if you decide that you do need a Madger replacement, what do you go out and buy? Do you buy a number 10? Do you buy another striker? Because he's such a difficult player to pin down, because he's quite unique in the way he plays. So it's going to be really interesting to see if they do have to replace him, what kind of player they buy.
Do you think, obviously they're trying to sign a striker anyway.
Yeah.
Do you think if Magic goes, they'll just go, okay, fair enough, and this is just in case, or will they then go, right, we'll go and get somebody else?
No, they would get somebody else as well. Okay. Because I think if they lost, the thing is, if you lost Magic as well, you wouldn't just lose another striker, you would also lose a player who kind of is really good around the edge of the box, if you see what I mean. Yeah. So you wouldn't just be losing a goal scorer, you'd also be losing potentially a little bit of a playmaker if you're playing with White as well. So certainly the plan is one more as it stands, and if you then decide you've got to replace Magic, you would bring another one in. But that's not difficult. That's quite difficult because he is such a unique player. But it is interesting that you mention it, because coming into the window, I was very much in the sense of don't disrupt it too much. You don't need to change too much. And I'm much more of the opinion now that you don't have to do anything daft, but it definitely feels like it needs a spark. It definitely needs, like, it's gone a little bit flat the last few weeks. And you can't over it, like... The fatigue thing is massive. The number of games they've played is just ridiculous. But it does feel like it's all gone a little bit flat at the moment, off the pitch as well as on it. And I do just think a little bit of freshness, a little bit of a spark would make a big difference at the moment.
It's probably why he's glad to be out there for the FA Cup as well, with some of those games getting...
I really do think it's going to be massive just to take a little bit of a breather. Get back on the training pitch. I mean, Jack Ross hasn't coached for about 3 months because it's just been like Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday. And I think that's a massive advantage for the teams who are a little bit more familiar. Mm. So I think a little break, hopefully a little bit of freshness. And I think that's really neat because it feels like hard work at the moment. It does feel like hard work.
Michael Clark's one of many who was just mentioning the Magic situation there, saying the club have said nothing's imminent, but you did break this afternoon, Phil, that have gone back with another bid for Will Grigg of Wigan.
Yeah, I think it's one that will probably drag on for a little bit. I think if anybody's kind of read what Paul Cook said last week and kind of looked at the noises coming out of Wigan, it's not there's clearly a price at which Will Grigg would be sold. I think that's quite obvious. I think Sunderland clearly feel they've had significant encouragement that he is available, but it's an interesting dilemma. How much is he worth? Because you balance against the fact that he's the best third tier striker over the last 5 years by a significant dip, by a country mile, but also that his championship record's a little bit mixed, isn't it?
This is a really interesting thing that the owners have got to try and balance up, because
how much is promotion worth?
Exactly.
So this is it. So it is an interesting debate, because you can see on one hand where they're saying, right, we're going to cut our cloth accordingly, and we're not going to be overpriced because his championship record suggests he's not going to be able to kick on with us next year if we get promoted. On the other hand, if you think his goals are going to guarantee us to get up, is he worth paying a little bit more than what you think he's worth? It goes back to like the Envilla situation, doesn't it? Where people were saying, no, they're right not to pay that because he's got 6 months left in his contract, and then they go out and sign him Dong instead
on that point as well, though, logically, if you're signing him, say, on an 18-month contract or a two-year contract, or it would be a two-and-a-half-year deal or an 18-month deal, wouldn't it, because of January. We are talking about a player to bring in League One who will guarantee... I'm going to do the quotation mark fingers, guarantee goals. In the summer, if we decide, once we're up, we decide he's not right for the championship, we'll have a queue of teams willing to take him off us. And we can say, right, well, we paid 700 grand for him.
Like Ipswich.
He's 700 grand. That's how much he costs. And then he gets us up, we get our money back, we sell.
It's an interesting dilemma, though, because that was the logic that Newcastle had when they went into the championship for a lot of the signings that they put on. Big money, and then got lumbered with Grant Hanley, and
it
is an interesting debate.
Length of contract, but I think defenders in wages.
They sold
Murphy. Got a club quite quickly. Who was a goal?
But I know. But my point is that they got rid of Gale this year in exchange for Rondon, didn't they? Basically, and they paid what, 10 and a half for him. They were trying to shift Richie in the summer to Stoke, weren't they? They could have got the money back if they wanted on Richie. So they could. I think.
Not sure. And also, they paid about 11 million quid from him, didn't they?
I think that's what Stoke. Well, exactly. Well, they were, though. So that's what Stoke were paying this summer. So you look at Grigg's situation, also comparing to Hanley and Murphy. Murphy's a 36-year-old striker now. Grigg's only 27, and he's a striker. Hanley's a centre defender. People don't want to, like, it's not glamorous spend, is it, 5 million quid in a centre defender? You'd sell Will Grigg for £500,000 in the summer.
And also, the other thing as well is that Sunderland might be taking a different view on Will Grigg in the Championship, and they might be looking at it saying, well, the last time Wigan were up there, they were down at the bottom. They were playing quite defensively. Mm-hmm. He was isolated. They might look at it and say, well, actually, with the manager we've got, with how we would view ourselves in the Championship, we don't think it would be as extreme as a jump. He'd be more effective. So all of these things are coming into the pot. But the kind of the context I'm trying to put it in is that I think you will probably see for a little while a little bit of to and fro in from both clubs. I think, as I said,
see, that probably like, oh, he's signed.
Press stop.
Well, no, I mean, I don't know how it will end, and not enough journalists admit that they don't know how things are going to end. And this is another one where you don't know where it's going to end. But I think certainly people can read between the lines between what's being said at the Wigan end, and it's clear that there's potentially a deal that we've done then. It's whether Sunderland feel the price is fair for all of the things that we've just discussed. I mean, I think it would be a massive addition. I think it would be a bit of a sign.
Oh, it would be. Yeah. And maybe if you look at, say, 09, for example, let's take him in isolation this season. Look at where he is now. I thought he was excellent again at the weekend.
Would you mention his tackle, by the way?
Oh, brilliant, wasn't it? It was like a proper... You don't see many of those...
He had that little moment after as well where he didn't know whether to like go over and have a little word with a player with us. Yeah. So he just sort of like hopped about for a little bit.
Did a little fist bump to the crowd.
But you look at the improvement that he's made.
Yeah.
Now, you made a really good point there about what do we think, or what does the staff think? What does Jack Ross think he can get out of Will Grigg? If he has looked at him for a period of time, because the suggestion that one might have been interim in the summer as well, if he's looking at him going, what can I get out of this player? What can I do to improve him? And he's talked before about improving players. You know, he might look at him and go out and make him into a Championship striker.
They did want him in the summer as well. So it's not sure about promotion. Yeah. Will Grigg might be available. All right. And so there is that long-term kind of view on him. I think it would be a great sign.
Why wouldn't you want somebody who scored, 60 goals and 70 goals? One of the leading scorers in the country last season. I think he's got 24, 25 goals in 2018. So, you know, he comes here, he probably, you know, in the games we've got left, we've got what? Say he doesn't get here for Scunthorpe. We love.
There's only one.
37, what? 19 games left.
Last league game of the month. Yeah, so that puts us in a bit of an advantageous position, doesn't it? If we are going to have to drag it out, he's only going to miss
one game.
But he's going to miss Scunthorpe now, you would
presume. Well, we signed by Thursday, he'll be in. But you'll have 19 games, say, to play. How many goals is he going to score in 19 games?
If it's 10 goals, then it's worth it.
Oh,
isn't
if it's 10 goals.
It could be more.
If it's 10 goals, you know. And he scores a winner in the Czech Trade Trophy final. 50,000 people at Wembley saying Will Grigg's on fire.
A few more people asking about Maggio, but obviously we've discussed that. Peter Stamp, will Dunn lead to Ross to try three at the back, Oviedo and O9, look tailor-made to be wing-backs? I could see why he would do that. Because
it's kind of how we were playing early in the season, wasn't it?
O9 has got a lot more to offer the further forward he gets. Oviedo as well, I agree with Peter. If you're going to play wing-backs, I would bring Oviedo in. Definitely ahead of Rhys James because he's got more offer in the final third.
Yeah,
it's an option. I mean, we don't know enough about Dunn yet, any of us.
No, I mean, to be honest, I'd be really surprised if he did that. I mean, if you think back to when they were playing that kind of lopsided three at the back earlier in the season, he didn't have McGeady, and I think that's a big thing, having McGeady as a kind of two orthodox wingers. I don't think that was something that Ross enjoyed doing, setting up the team that way. Personally, I think it was more kind of a necessity thing, and he's definitely not. He still very much wants O9 to play midfield. He's not being sort of, oh, actually, now that I've seen him playing. I think, if anything, it's made him even more pushed towards showing what those runs could do from midfield. Do you know what I mean? That kind of instinct. So I don't necessarily see it going that way. I mean, Dunn is a left-sided centre-back, which is something he's been after for a long time and has felt he's lacked a natural player. So it is possible that he could play in that position and then you would offer a bit more protection for Oviedo or what have you. But I'd be surprised if that came back regularly.
That could be, again, cliche, like mentioned guaranteed goals early, but actually given 09 the chance to start a game in the middle of midfield could be like a new sign, and now that Adam Matthews is fit.
I think he has to if Honeyman's not fit.
We need that energy, someone who's used to playing a little bit higher up. One thing with 09 that I noticed the first time on Saturday as well is his first touch is excellent. Like, probably, like, head of this league as well. Like, it's like, you know, that one Maguire had against Peterborough where he, like, controlled it really well on the touchline. He did a couple of those on Saturday and just need that energy. And I think Power was a little bit better on Saturday than he has been for a while. But again, he's played a lot of games recently. Could it be time maybe to just rotate him out a bit? I thought McGeek was very good on Saturday and is better away from home generally.
I think he struggles it's his fitness, isn't it, McGeoch?
But possibly,
the last 20 minutes he started to give a ball.
He was much better in the first half, I know what you mean. But I think them two away from home could potentially complement each other quite well.
I still think McGeoch wouldn't be in my... somebody else has asked here about McGeoch. I can't find his name. And it's something I've said before. I think that McGeoch wouldn't be in my first choice midfield now. But I think McGeoch would be better in the championship, personally. I think the higher up you go, he would offer you more because of his ball retention when you need
it. Yeah, I know what you mean. Personally.
I think, to be honest, I've said this quite a few times. I would pick McGeoch every week. I think I think the two centre-halves behind him look twice as good every time he plays. And my big criticism of the Sunderland team is I think there's too many players who force it too often. And I think McGeoch's someone who'll actually take a minute just to settle the game down. Sometimes I think Sunderland have lacked that.
He refuses passes and it annoys me.
I don't think he did that as much on Saturday. I've been annoyed with him about that in the past, but I thought he was much more decisive on Saturday. He looked like he was in the groove. He looked like he had a bit of momentum behind him, which is probably came with actually getting a run of games, because he has been interrupted by the being dropped, or he's had little injuries towards the start of the season. But I think he's looking like he's really benefited from knowing his role in the side now and getting used to partnerships like you were on about before, Phil. How other teams have this. Him and Power did have a little bit of that. It does kind of contradict me saying I'd potentially take Power out.
But I wouldn't take him up this weekend because we've got such that big break. So obviously, he won't play in the Checker Trade game, you wouldn't have thought. So, you know, he could play this weekend and then have a nice, you know, 10 days.
Nice little rest. Nice little trip to Fausto Coffee.
Yeah, a few coffees probably get in a fortnight.
I don't have too many though, because you'll peak too much.
Remember when everyone was fuming because Kasri had a coffee on the bench against Barnes?
I was one of the funniest things I've seen in football though. Like, it was just the ultimate. Just I have not got a significant contribution to make.
It'd totally been better if he like lit a tab up as well. And he had his own little patio furniture table there.
He should be drinking like a multicoloured, like, energy drink. That's isotonic. What he should be drinking, an isotonic drink.
To be fair, though,
chemicals.
It was more just his vibe. It was just like, I've just nipped out of Barnsley for the afternoon. Like, yeah. He's been linked with PSG today, by the way.
Really?
I don't know if anyone saw that. Who would have thought that once he went back to France,
he was all right. He wasn't as bad as people wanted to be, I don't think.
We've covered more of the rest of what people have to ask, to be honest. So we'll just wrap up Kevin Defty, Liam Weird, two of many people who are just saying us.
Well done, your podcasts are brilliant.
Do we think we've got enough? And it's people have getting a little bit nervous with the last few games, unable to put sides away. Do people still think we're on course? The Luton manager thing is going to have an impact,
time,
I think. Yeah.
Over time it will. Because they'll be so used to preparing for games in a certain way for such a long time, and that's going to change. No.
It might take a couple of months or it might take a few weeks.
It will, because I'd be so used to it. Well, we did it this way before, we did it that way before. Psychologically, there's no way as a human being you can reset so quickly. It's going to be a period of adjustment.
It'd also be interesting to see if Luton or Portsmouth get a couple of injuries and stuff. I feel like we've had quite a lot, but we've got the squad to cope with it.
I don't think there's a lot between the top six at the moment. I really don't. From having watched Barnsley most of them at least once. Barnsley now 3 points behind. And
I think they're four. Are they? What have we got? Have we got 40? Have we got 52?
We don't have
a game in hand on Barnsley. No. Fair level with us.
They've got 49 Barnsley. I think we've got 52.
I think the top. I think there's a massive for me.
Yeah,
there's a
you're
massive
right, 3 points. 3 points out of Barnsley.
Is it
49 away on 52? Yeah. That's what you've just said. That's 3 points.
Yeah, it is.
I think the top seven are quite close, and I think there's a massive gap after that. So I think it is, I think it's tense. But like I say, at the moment, it just feels a little bit like it's hard work with Sunderland. But I think there's reasons for that. I'm not overly concerned at this
point. Well, we didn't mention the next seven fixtures. Have you got them written down?
I'll get them now. You fill.
Well, basically, the next seven fixtures, the highest placed team that will play in the next seven as it stands, obviously that can change in the course of those seven games, is Wycombe Wanderers, who are 13th. So we've got a lot of teams in the bottom half of the table to play over the course of the next seven games.
Oxford and Bristol Rovers coming up next month.
Yeah, Bristol Rovers,
Scunthorpe, next. Wimbledon. And then we've got that game against Man City, none of us want. Wimbledon at home, who are currently bottom, yeah. Oxford away, Blackpool at home, Accrington Stanley at home, Gillingham at home, Bristol Rovers away, Plymouth at home, Accrington Stanley away, Wigan away. You get the Barnsley in March, mid-March.
So maybe I was wrong then, because Blackpool will be the highest placed team. That'll be the toughest game.
I can just see Will Griggs somewhere in Wigan with his boots on.
Just ready
to start plundering.
Just like going, how many goals did he score against these seven teams in the last 2 years?
Watching his highlight reel on YouTube. With HD, Will Grigg, fire emoji, goals.
So you rock up at Wimbledon at the Stadium of Light with a coffee.
I'm so pleased that's been brought up again. I'd forgotten about that. That was just such a wonderful moment.
He's like, "Will you start?" And he's like, "No, I'll just wait on the bench until 60 minutes.
The kettle's boiling. Give us five.
Yeah, I'll just come on for the last half an hour. Don't worry about it. And then he just stroll on, hat trick, and that'll be it.
Bosh.
Exactly. Coffee celebrations.
Coffee.
Contrived fire, coffee celebration. No, there. It would be. You'd have like one of the substitutes bring like a Martin Baines Nespresso machine down the touchline and just get an espresso out and have a little cheeky drink.
Yeah. Feel like it should be Johnny Williams.
Max Power with a thank you card.
Yeah, nice. Very
That's
good.
What you'd have.
Right, we're all off to watch episode 7 of Sunderland Till I Die game and watch your dar shout, pay the ref, how much you pay the ref.
He didn't say that. Round he said, let's have a whip round. Yeah. The referee, pay the ref.
How much are they paying you, ref?
The dedication to that joke, like he just went all in.
When
he got money out. He
playing to the crowd as well.
With
do you
money?
Think he got cash out before he went to the match as well? Like, I better get some money out. Yeah. Well, cameras are on us today.
You can't get food in the ground and that without cash, can you? So maybe you like to pipe before the game.
Got contactless machines.
They didn't last season.
Maybe he didn't have them there.
True. They didn't have them last season, I'm telling you.
We'll be back on Thursday, won't we? As always, though, thanks for listening.
Flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.